All right, Steve Palmer here, here with Troy again for another They Don't Teach You That in Law School series. And what is that all about? Well, we talk about stuff they don't teach you in law school, and Troy, being a law student, would know better than any of us what they teach and what they don't teach, or at least so far, second year, right? Finish your second year, starting your third year.
Yep, rising 3L now is the term.
3L, so this is like fancy talk. So this goes way back, and I think there's a guy named Scott Turow who wrote some books. He was a novelist, and he wrote Presumed Innocent, became a Harrison Ford movie. I think that was Turow. Anyway, I think he wrote a book called 1L, which goes way back, but it was about your first year in law school. But later that became a series called The Paper Chase, I think, or a movie, and then a series called The Paper Chase. So anyway.
Now I know my origins of my name.
Now you know. So they call it 1L, like your first year of law student. Like you're so cool, you've got the lingo. Or you could just say it's my first year in law school.
Yeah, I could probably do that.
All right. Well, look, I'll tell you what they're not going to teach you in law school. A lawyer is not a bus.
That's true. I don't know what that is.
A lawyer is not a bus. I didn't learn this in law school, but I did learn this right after law school when we were studying for, there are two facets of the bar exam now. One is something called the MPRE, which is the Model Professional Responsibility Exam. You have to take that?
I'm taking it this fall. Big thing is I'm taking PR, which is the class that preps you for it. Yeah. And then after that, I'm going to take it in December.
Tell us.
Professional Responsibility is a class that's required, at least at our school, most schools it is. It preps you just for the MPRE. So most people will take that class, and then right after that, you would take the MPRE. So that's why I'm taking it this fall.
I got you.
It makes the studying a lot easier.
It's not just to prep you for the MPRE. It's professional responsibility designed to teach you the rules of ethics and professionalism that govern our practice. And the MPRE is like the BARSA or the ABA or whoever makes up this crap. It's their way of saying, of ensuring that you learn those things before you enter into the real world and face the storm of the practice of law. But we do have rules, right? We have rules that govern what we do, things we can talk to clients about, things like attorney-client privilege is what I'm getting at, and all sorts of other things, how we conduct ourselves in front of judges and courts, et cetera. It's not just for the MPRE, but I think somebody in preparation for the MPRE back when I was probably a 3L, so maybe I did learn this in law school.
Maybe.
But it was outside law school. We took a prep class, and the guy gave us three rules to pass the MPRE. I don't remember the other two, but I do remember this one. So, but I know all the rules, I promise. I know this one, and the first rule he says, a lawyer is not a bus. And I've never forgotten it. He had some other quippy ones, but that one stuck with me. And here's his point. What's a bus do? We'll play a little Socratic law school.
A bus drives people around, just transports people. That's right. About it.
So a city bus goes to every bus stop and has to stop.
Mm-hmm. Has a planned route, takes people where they need to go, takes their money, kind of deal.
And his point is the city bus has to let people on the bus. If you've got your nickel, you get to ride the bus.
Yep.
All right. But a lawyer's not a bus. We don't have to stop in front of every client's house and take on that client. And the reason I'm bringing this up, because I'm gonna sort of shift this now that you've seen the practice of law upstairs, it's really easy to fall into the trap of letting the client run the show. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying it's not the client's interest and the client's opinions isn't important. It certainly is. We are the professionals that have to make the decisions legally, and we have to decide what's ethical and what's not ethical. And we can only work within those bounds. And clients would say, I don't give a rat's behind if it's ethical or not. I want you to do it. And the point I think that this guy was making is we are not buses. We can say no to representing somebody that we're not comfortable representing. And this comes up in all sorts of ways. We could be, say I had a client recently and had received a target letter. I'm not going to talk about the specifics, but it was a target letter from the federal government. And this client was under investigation for something. And the target letter said, contact the USA, the United States attorney. I did that. And then things sort of went dormant. Well, the client was going haywire. Didn't like that. Mm-hmm. Wanted something to happen fast. Wanted stuff to go on. Wanted me to do things that were outside the purview of what I thought was prudent. And eventually I just had to say, look, no hard feelings. I can't do that. I can't do it. And of course the client went elsewhere. Fine. Now it also comes up in times when clients call us, say you're a young lawyer, you get a call from a client that says, look, and look, you and I do criminal defense work together.
Mm.
You help me upstairs. How much divorce work do we do?
We do no divorce work.
No divorce work. So let's say you're Troy Hendrickson, attorney at law, and you got your shingle hanging out there. And, you know, the first month comes along and you got a couple bucks in the door and it's getting sort of lean because your phone bill's due and you're thinking, man, I need to get some cases in. And next thing you know, Mr. Jones calls and says, I got a divorce. Can you do it? Or will you do it?
I can technically do it, but I should not do it.
Or you have to consult with somebody else to help you do it.
If I was planning on going to the family, I could probably work with the already established family attorney, maybe do it together and learn from them, but I should not just take it on and do something I have never done before.
But you're not a bus. You don't have to stop and pick that guy up just to get his nickel.
No.
Now, you know what else comes up a lot is, and you're gonna experience this, and new lawyers just starting out, and I'm not necessarily talking about the guys going to work for the big firms. That's a different ilk. But people that do what we do, where we're slugging it out on the streets day in and day out. Aunt Joanne calls, says, I need you to do this case. You know, I bought this car and the engine's bad and I need, I want you to do this case.
Or you get that phone call.
You get all the time, right?
It's like,
and there's two problems. One, there are always these not always, but most of the time, these are like these wishy-washy, no.
Yeah.
But because Aunt Joanne, she's compromised, meaning she knows you. And it's really hard to look at your aunt who has sort of been above you in the human hierarchy because she's older and she's your aunt and you've always given her respect. And it's hard to look at your aunt and say, you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get this is what I call can't you just questions. Can't you just call?
Can't you just file this? Like maybe if they see a lawyer's involved, like maybe they'll just immediately give up some money. And it's like,
can't you just write a letter?
Yeah.
Can't you just? You have to say no to this. You have to say no because it's always a hornet's nest. I don't care what it's almost always a hornet's nest where you make the phone call and next thing you know, you're on the hook and there's letters going back and forth. It's an area of law. You have no idea what the heck you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And you're thinking, why did I do this? And you forgot that you're not a bus. You didn't have to stop in front of Aunt Joanne's house and take her on.
But I really wanted to.
Well, and you know, Aunt Joanne says, look, I promise I'll pay you. And she says, how about I give you $500? And you're looking at this thinking, all right, I could use the $500, but if this requires a lawsuit, it's going to take like 50 hours of my time. Mm-hmm. That's worth more than $500. What do I do? Yeah, it's like you're almost always better saying no. You know, I love it. One of my favorite sayings is no is a complete sentence. Can you do this? No.
That is a complete sentence.
No, I can't. And look, I you don't have to be rude to people, but saying no to representation is critical and being able to discern what you can do, what you can't do, what you should do, and what you shouldn't do as you start a practice. And I think law school does not do a great job of teaching this because there's no way to teach it in law school. You just have to step into that pit full of spikes on your own and experience it because, I mean, look, here's a war story. Early on, I took on a case just like this. I needed the money. It was some litigation, some potential medical malpractice case that had very little value. And I thought, well, look, I need the money. I'm not busy anyway, but then I get busy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then something that you want to do or something that can in your area comes along and this gets brushed aside and you can get sideways very quickly in this stuff. And this is how lawyers screw up. This is how you go sideways with your responsibilities to the client. The other thing, I mean, can you think, well, I'll ask you, other times you should say no, even in your practice area.
In criminal defense, probably should say no.
I'll help you.
Okay.
Crazy people.
Oh,
right? And look, I'm sorry. I don't know what you want me to tell you. I don't know what else to call it. But there are people who are crazy.
Yeah, no, right? We've had discussions.
And look, I'm going to use the political correct. There are people who have mental health issues. And sometimes it's obvious. Sometimes it's not so obvious. But as you experience, like the more you experience it, the more you'll learn to see the signs. I read an article one time about, it was a criminal defense lawyer of, you know, probably, when I read the case, he had, or read the article, he had probably my age, like looking back.
Yeah.
And he would, I saved it somewhere, but it was back when we still had print, so I don't know if I can dig it up, but I saved it somewhere. I ripped it out of the bar journal or something and put it in a file. And it was like, it talked about all the warning signs of a case you shouldn't take. Client wants to pay you in payments. Client wants to pay you later or after the case, or client is demanding stuff, or client's communication needs are way beyond what you're capable of. Like whatever it is, it always goes, like, you know the signals in the back of your head. The point of the article is that we always know in the back of our heads, like back here in this little area where it's saying, or that maybe over here, the angel's saying, don't do it. Don't take it. Don't take that case. It's going to be a problem, and you know it. But then the devil over here saying, you need the money. You need the money. Take it. You need the money. It's like Animal House. But yeah. But you have to listen to the angel. You have to. Because it's hardly ever worth it. And when you, sometimes those deals never, ever end. And back to the mental health, I mean, I've had people say, look, the FBI is following me. They've got bugs in my car.
Maybe they do.
And maybe they do. They've got, and you know, you start to listen to the story and it goes on and on and on. And next thing you know, there's like this, I had somebody tell me they have this scope that nobody's ever seen before, but it can slither under doors, and it was going through the doors and up into their bedroom and watching them at night. And, you know, after all, like it took me about 10 minutes of listening to this person talk. And then that came up. I'm like, oh, there's a mental health problem. Right? And I don't want to laugh at the mental health problem. It's a serious concern. But the point is, like, if you take that on, you are taking on a mess, and almost always people can't pay you to do it. Mm-hmm. Those cases hardly ever work out in our financial, it's never a fair deal. All right, I know what you're all thinking. Like lawyers, you're all sharks and you steal money from it. This is our job.
Yeah.
Right. We do this for a living. And there's components to this where, you know, I think if you don't want to help people doing what we do, if you don't have that in your heart, where's my heart? Heart's over here. If you don't have that in your heart,
anatomy is not taught in law school. Don't worry.
We didn't learn anatomy in law. They don't teach you that in law school. If it's not in your heart to help people and try to, and get people through problems, don't do this. But if that is in your heart, sometimes it tugs you in directions that go too far, and you end up not earning a living, because we want to help people and we have to earn a living. Mm-hmm. And if you spend all this time over here, you know, you're gonna struggle. Mm-hmm. So now there are places. Look, I firmly believe there's a famous public defender and lecturer on trial advocacy skills named Terrence McCarthy, and he's awesome. He's probably retired by now.
Teaches at Capitol Law, probably.
But he would go around and lecture seminars, and he used to say, look, do God's work, meaning public defender work, because then you're getting, like, you can help those kind of people. Like, if your heart really pulls you in that direction, you can do that kind of work and help lots and lots of people. But if you do what we do, we're not getting paid unless our client pays us. Like, we don't get paid unless our client pays. Like, this is this is our job. It's like you've got a side business, and unless you get paid, you don't make any money.
Yeah.
So the can't you just questions don't pan out.
I think the commercials is what tricks people up, because you always hear all the personal injury ones where it's like, I don't get paid unless you get paid. It's like, well, we're not here really, like, we're not getting you money. We're trying to help you out here.
Well, you bring up an interesting point. So I get this question all the time. Look, if you win, if you take my case and win, I'll pay you X dollars. Can't you just do it that way? Because if you win the case, then I can go back to work and I can pay you. You're talking about the, we don't get paid unless you get paid. That's a contingency fee. Like a personal injury case. And there's a valid reason for those. But back to the rules of ethics, we're not allowed to do that. Mm-hmm. I can't take a contingency fee in a criminal case. In other words, if you hire me to do work, you hire us to do a job for you. you're not paying us to win the case. You're paying us to work for you, and we want to win the case.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to get paid for our work irrespective of whether we win the case. Now, people would say, well, that's not fair. That sucks. Why would I do that? Just how it is. You know? And maybe this is another important point they don't teach you in law school. When you hire a criminal defense lawyer, you're hiring somebody to help you through the problem. Maybe that means a jury trial. Maybe that means finishing the appeal. Maybe that means helping you through an investigative stage and nothing. Whatever it is, you're hiring our time.
A lot of my friends in law school, I was telling them, very few do criminal, and they were all like, I was telling them, we get paid usually beforehand, and they're all just like, what? Because they all get paid on the back half. And I was just like, I mean, yeah, imagine we do go to trial. Imagine they lose.
Yeah,
and then they go to jail, and they're like, oh, well, that makes sense. And I was like, yeah, I mean, it's just how it has to work in criminal. Like, you can't do it on the back half. And so I just thought it was crazy that law students didn't even.
Well, they don't do a good job of, and I'm not saying they should do a good job of teaching us law. Maybe they should. I don't know. But they don't teach you in law school this idea of client interaction. And I don't want to say client management because that means like we're trying to manage a client. But look, we have to set expectations for our clients immediately. It starts immediately with the first phone call. So we get calls all the time. I mean, you hear me talk to people on the phone all the time. They're like, well, can you, like, what are the odds I can win my case?
I don't know.
I have the foggiest idea, right? I don't know anything about your case. Well, yeah, but if I tell you this, this, and this, can't you win?
We should sell like an app that has like FanDuel like gambling settings for your case. Like put in your facts. Right. It's like, okay, betting odds on you right here. And then people can start betting on it too.
We could lay odds on the outcomes.
Yeah.
It's sort of like Pete. Yeah, anyway I could see why that would be run afoul of the rules of ethics. But no, people like they say they deliver us facts and say, tell me you can win. If you can't win, I'm going to hire somebody else. And almost all, it's not always, it usually doesn't come out that concisely, but I've shortened it here for conversation purposes. But that's the gist of what they're saying. And I usually tell them, look, if you want me to promise you an outcome, I'm not going to. Why am I talking to you then? I will promise you that I will work as hard as I can for you. That if there is a way to win this case, I will do my best to find it. That if it can be won, I've done this a long time. I have good experience. I can help you. But I can't promise you that we're going to go into a courtroom and win your jury trial. What are the chances I win?
Well, my buddy Troy has this app that you should try out. And that is where we can figure out your chances.
I don't know, but guess what? Tell all your friends here because we take a VIG on the backside.
Yeah.
But the point is we're not buses, right? We don't have to take that case. That's one of those cases I'm talking about where the bells are going off in the back of your head. People are trying to extract from you promises that you are not capable of delivering. And when you're young and you're starting out, and most important, you are hungry. And I don't mean like hungry motivated. I mean like hungry because you can't go to the grocery store and pay your bills. You're going to take those cases and they're problems. There's a snake pit on the other side because guess what's going to, I mean, you already know what's going to happen. You don't win the case, then what?
Then Aunt gets really mad at me. Every family reunion's awkward from there on out.
Yeah, those. I mean, I'm not talking about Aunt Joanne, let's talk about Aunt Joanne. Like, what happens? Like Aunt Joanne, like at Thanksgiving, Aunt Joanne wants to talk about her car dealership case, and you're thinking, I want to grab a beer and eat some turkey.
Yeah.
So Thanksgiving dinner tastes funky now because Aunt Joanne's always bugging me about my legal problem, and she wants it free.
Yeah.
Which is the worst thing. So another bit of advice, some lawyer, I can't remember her name, I'll think of it. But she told me early on, don't do freebies for your family. Don't do it. Don't do it.
Because then Aunt Joanne tells the rest of the family, my DUI was free through Troy. Now everyone at that Thanksgiving thinks it's free DUIs all around. Everybody's driving home from Thanksgiving at that point.
So Troy will help me. Troy will do it. Troy, like, I'll call Troy. And, you know, I've run into this where family expects you to do stuff for free. And this really emerged for me during COVID. When we didn't have a whole lot of work and people were laid off and it was chaos, I didn't have time. People were calling me and there was somebody that called and wanted me to, it was a distant relative, hey, I got this siding installed on my house and didn't go right and, you know, whatever it was. And I was just like, look, man, I love you. I don't have time. I can't do it. And first of all, I don't know anything about siding litigation on houses. Secondly, I don't have the time to figure it out. And thirdly, I can't make any money on it, you know, and I don't have the time to give away I can't pay my bills as it is. So, you know, it's one of those where if you learn early on, and they don't teach you this in law school, maybe I should, you know what, they should bring me in. and talk to the, like the third years going out into the real world and say, listen, here's the stuff you need to know. You're setting yourself up for disaster. Learn your first phone call, how to say no. Mm. I'm not a bus. I don't have to pick you up. And when I say learn how to say it, don't be mean about it, but just say, no, I'm sorry, I can't do that. Mm. Well, can't you just? These are the can't you just questions. Well, can't you just write a letter? I'll tell you one more war story. Somebody I knew one time was asking me to do something like this. And I helped one person. It was two roommates. And I helped one person. I wrote a letter. So I violated my, the Palmer's rules here are written in blood, my own. Like the mistakes that I have made. I wrote a letter for somebody. And it was two roommates and a landlord-tenant problem. And I got my friend out of it. And the other friend wanted the same letter. And I was like, look. So the first friend saying, can you do the same for my buddy here? You comment on that one. So I got one person, I got out of a lease, and the other person has asked me to do the same thing.
It seems, at least in the criminal world, this seems like a conflict. Like you shouldn't be, you can only pick one of them.
That's right. Sure.
And then you could refer the other one to another attorney.
Who is going to charge them.
Yes, yes.
Right.
And
can't you just write a letter though?
No, I can't. I'd like the ethically like excuse that you're like, I'm sorry, ethically, like can't do that.
Right. So, which is
a great excuse.
Exactly what I said. Look, I cannot do that. I cannot do it. The lease is in this person's name, not your name. You don't even have a lease with this company. This person does. Not only is there two of you, there's an actual conflict because your defense is that guy's on the lease, not me.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, it got so crazy that the first friend, the friend of the friend asked the first friend to steal my letterhead and write a letter and forge it. And I found out about that. I went ballistic. I don't even talk to this person anymore. It was like, it's lunacy, man. I mean, people will push you to do stuff and you have to say no. It reminds me, Abe Lincoln, I've told you this recently, a lawyer's time is a stock in trade. That's attributable to Abe Lincoln. Whether Honest Abe actually said it, I don't know. But it is our time. And I think the can't you just questions are really a way of saying, can't you just give me your inventory for free? Can't you just do this for free? Can't you just work for free? And sometimes with clients, this goes so far where I would just say, look, man, what do you do for a living? Well, I'm a plumber. What do you make an hour? $25 an hour. Can't you just come to my house? I got this remodel going on. Can't you just come to my house and plumb it all?
Yeah. Just install this one toilet real quick for me.
Well, there are a lot of, sometimes the one toilet, can't you just come install the toilet? Can't you just? And I'm just for free, just do it. And you know, that sometimes will help sort of frame the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get the next inevitable question. Well, don't you have to do pro bono work? Pro bono is free work for the people, for the good.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I wasn't going to get into this, but we will. And I'll give you my spiel on pro bono work. I believe in it. I believe in pro bono cases. I do a ton of it. I represent folks without charging them. I do it for all sorts of reasons. Money, or not money. I do it for ego. I do it for cause. I do it to help. I do it for whatever, all my reasons I do it.
Mm-hmm.
And meaning pro bono work, like I'll take on a case knowing I'm not going to get paid and I'll just do it. A lot of big firm lawyers will do criminal cases or criminal appellate cases pro bono. It's a bad mistake, by the way, because you don't know what you're doing. I mean that. It's sort of like we look, I can do a criminal case.
What they really should do is let's just hire people like us who do it.
Spend the money, right?
Spend the money and
get
then,
them. Get the same thing, right?
Yeah. Just like literally you can literally put your name really on it, like if they really want to, and like, at the end of the day, it would look way better.
And it's might done
get
right.
Better, yeah, and you might get better right. Results, and it's a win-win for everybody.
Yeah. So a couple things about that. First, no, we do not have to do pro bono work. There is no requirement. Now, in the rules of professional, in the rules of ethics, there's a suggestion that you should. And, you know, I think, I do believe in giving back, and I do a lot of that. But we don't have to. And I'm certainly not going to do it for the person who demands it.
Mm-hmm.
right? So this is my pet peeve. Yes, I do pro bono work when I want to do it. And, you know, call me selfish if you will, but I can't always take on a pro bono case because I'm busy. Mm-hmm. Like, or right now I've got stuff going on in my personal life. There's no way I could take on a pro bono case. I don't have the time to do it. Sometimes I do and I will. And it's got to be a case I like. And it's got to be a client that I know I can get along with. Like, those things have to converge.
The planets have to align.
The stars and planets have to align. And then I'll do pro bono work. But I get to choose when I do that. I get to choose it because I'm not a bus. Mm-hmm. If I see somebody that I know or somebody that I think is that I want to help on the side of the road and I want to pick them up, I can do that. But it's a private bus. It's not a public bus. I don't have to stop if I don't want to.
So we're a private bus. I was thinking more like, I don't think private buses exist, do they?
Sure they do. They're called limousines or Uber. Uber is one.
Well, yeah, Uber. I was trying to think of like a private like driver almost. Like, I absolutely don't know.
Look, before Uber, you could hire private drivers. You could hire they'd show up in a Lincoln Continental or something, mm-hmm. and they would pick you up and take you. But they didn't have to. They could say, look, I took you before and you were an asshole. I'm not, you left trash in my car and spilled your beer all over the place. I'm not picking you up.
Mm-hmm. Heaven forbid I have a roadie. I'm sorry.
Right. But I'm not a bus. I'm not going to do it. So the point of all this is they're not teaching in law school these boundaries. And I think these are lessons for life too. I mean, you've got to establish boundaries or people will take advantage of it. And when you're a lawyer, people presume you're already experiencing. People assume you know everything.
Yeah, it's a terrible mistake on their part.
particularly in your
case. Yeah, like.
Right. But people think you know everything. And I get these questions all the time. Like, you know, I got this problem. I got this stuff going on my siding. Or I got this stuff going on over here. I got this letter from, you know, from whatever. And I'm like, well, aren't you a lawyer? Can't you do this? And there's a really easy way to handle it. No. Mm-hmm. Or if you want to help, what I do, I say, listen, this is not my area of practice. I can't do it. Mm-hmm. I know people that can. Here's a referral. Call this person. And, you know, are they going to charge me? Yeah. Yeah. Just like if you referred me to a mechanic to go change my engine in my car, I'm going to pay for that. Mm-hmm. But then it's easy. It's done. It's out of my practice area. Now, if it's in your practice area and they want you to do it for free, you have to decide. Is this a case I want to do for free? And if it's your family, if it's your aunt, if it's your uncle, if it's your nephew, if it's your brother, it's almost always a bad idea. Almost always. So anyway, they don't teach you that in law school, that I promise. They should, though. They talk to those people.
I'll let them know.
All right, well, look, if you've got a law school question, any other question, or a topic you want us to cover, check us out, lawyertalkpodcast.com. We're on the socials. We're in the podcast world. We're in the ether. We are everywhere, off the record, on the air. Till next time. By the way, we're sponsored by Circle 270 Media. Phenomenal. If you've got a podcast that you want, if you're in the Central Ohio area, even nationally, great podcast consultant, check out Circle 270 Media. Brett over there will take care of you.